Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio.
The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888.
Welcome to the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigo.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. And we gather here at this fine community radio station right here in central Iowa in the middle of it all. It's a good, Donna, they let us on the radio to talk about things, and we have a good time doing it.
Yeah, we make up a show every week. This is going on 6 years, right?
We're sliding into our seventh year. Well, although we could say maybe some of those first shows were kind of rocky, but we got our wings under our sails.
We're
now.
Still occasionally rocky.
Anyway, welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. Today on the Donalana Kitchen, we're going to talk about fungi, the world of mushrooms, and all the stuff that we don't know yet about. That's what's kind of nice about it. It's a huge, huge community.
Mysterious mushrooms.
Yes. And we'll also be talking about ramps and nettles and a little word about sandhill cranes. But one of the first things up in the woods this time of year, Donna, is ramps. Tell us about ramps.
Okay. It's onion.
It's an onion.
It's a wild onion.
Yeah, this time of year, things are just starting to come up. Bluebells are coming, and I can tell, for some reason, where I find bluebells in my little bit of woods, I also find ramps. They look like
they're kind of like a lily of the valley leaf, aren't they?
Big flat leaves.
They're very obvious. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Even I have found them in the woods.
They look like kind of a lily leaf, but if nothing is really that big and green this time of year, break off a little bit and give it a taste, and you will taste. They are of the onion family, and I am. Harvested a little bit and gave some to Donna, and lo and behold, she has a recipe.
Okay, it's for ramp pesto. Now, here's the thing about ramps. In occasional, like, farmers, I used to see them at this time of year in the farmers markets. I mean, it's not something that's sold commercially. It's just there's not enough. It's a hand harvesting thing. But you will see them where they actually dig the whole thing up, and you've got the little bulb on the end of it and the leaf, all of which is edible. But I found a recipe it's called the foragerchef.com. And he will have a book out this summer, and we will get a copy and review it because I really like his work. But anyway, it's called The Forager Chef, Hunting Mushrooms, Wild and Obscure Foods. So he has a ramp leaf pesto. Now, the nice thing about this, because, you know, there are not that many of them out there, and this is something you always have to remember when you forage, is you must not, if you overpick, it won't come back again next year, because this is not, there's not somebody out there sticking the seeds in the ground. You know, you have to rely on natural chance and all kinds of things. So the good thing about this ramp pesto recipe is it calls for just the leaf. So if you're foraging with the ramps, you can take your little scissors that you should be out in the woods with, and you can clip off, certainly not all the leaves, but randomly some leaves from each plant, because they will regrow. So you're not actually killing off the plant, which is really, really good for something that's fairly rare, like ramps. So his recipe, I made it this morning, and Lana and I both agreed that it's delightful.
It's spring. It's
green.
This taste of green ramp is lovely. So how did you do this?
All right. So food processor, right? Of course. The ingredients. He calls for 8 ounces of fresh ramp leaves, washed and cleaned. Okay, Lana brought me a bunch. I actually weighed them so I'd get the proportions right, and it was really 6 ounces.
Okay, 6 ounces was about 35 leaves. Okay,
okay,
but it depends on
right. The size. Okay. So I, you know, made the thing proportionally. So you take half of those leaves and you have a pot of boiling water and you blanch them, which means you drop the leaves into the boiling water very quickly, like a second or two, right? He says, cook half the ramp leaves just until they wilt in the water and turn bright green, a few seconds. Then immediately transfer them to very cold water, which I did. I had a pan sitting with cold water and ice cubes. So you cool them down because you don't, that stops the cooking. Then you have to drain them and then pat them dry because you want to get as much moisture out of them so your pesto doesn't take too much liquid. So then after you have blanched only half of them, and that really is to tame the onion heat because the ramps are fairly spicy. They're strong. So you've blanched half of them, then you chop all of the leaves together, the blanched ones and the raw ones. You put them in the food processor. Now, he has a very nice trick here I like, which I'm going to try with basil pesto later and other herbal things. Normally in a pesto, you use Parmesan cheese, a little acidulation, and pine nuts. Of course, pine nuts are wonderful. We all love pine nuts, but they are here in the Midwest and mostly in the U.S. quite expensive. So he uses sunflower seeds, which is a good substitute. I'm going to try that more.
It's
so
good.
This takes a heaping tablespoon of sunflower seeds, which he toasts. He toasts them in the oven. I just toasted them on the stovetop. You know, you take a dry skillet and, you know, you want to get them cooked enough that they're toasty, but not, you don't want to burn them. So, and then, so you put the blanched and the unblanched chopped ramps into the food processor with a heaping tablespoon of sunflower seeds. Now, he uses a half cup of a certain kind of sunflower oil, which I don't have. So I just used olive oil, which is fine. A half cup, because that's really the liquid that's going to emulsify the whole thing. And 3 tablespoons of Parmesan, ground Parmesan, right? And a dash of lemon juice. Now, I ended up putting also a little bit of salt in it. And then you just puree it. And it's a fairly smooth pesto. The picture makes it look really smoother than mine got. Mine, he said to be sure to leave it a little bit chunky so that it doesn't oxidize too quickly. But it's, you know, it's basically the most complicated part is simply the blanching. It's no big deal. And you just, then you grind it all up and we're going to have it on our pasta tonight.
It is good. And it's good to have all these things up in the woods. Look for ramps and be careful about leaving some to grow for next year.
Well, it also, you know, we're going to talk about a few other things that are popping up right now. It's kind of like, you know, when you think of spring cleaning, eating all these nice fresh green foods that has real, real nutritional advantages for kind of ginning up your whole system for this. You know, we're coming into dandelions. We've got motherwort. Later we'll talk about nettles.
Yeah. Oh, another thing that's up in the woods is Virginia waterleaf. Look it up on the internet so you know what the leaf looks like. That is
little specialty thing. I think I have
nice
some in the backyard.
Green. Nice spring green. Eat it as a addition to your salad or just make a Virginia waterleaf salad all of its own.
And the thing about them when they're fresh and tender, you know, later they get tougher to chew and actually more bitter. Mm-hmm. So a lot of those things, while you can eat them all summer long, they're not as delightfully, tender for one thing. They just taste better this time of year. And it's kind of fun to get out and pick around.
Good. Let's talk about mushrooms. We watched a interesting movie called Fantastic Fungi. Fungi. Talk about Fantastic Fungi, Donna.
Well, it's a movie that's been out maybe for about a year. Some of the principals in the movie, including the investors, and it's based on the work of Paul Stamets, whose work I have followed for almost 30 years. And the director and producer is also someone that I was friends with and from my days in Hollywood and environmental circles. So I was looking forward to this movie because I knew that the point of view of what they were trying to say, and it is a documentary, would be things that I'm very interested in. And the director cinematographer is well known for his beautiful, beautiful lyrical nature photography.
Oh, if you want to see something pretty, watch all the time-lapse photos of mushrooms coming to fruition. It's a pretty movie, but it's got a lot of things about the world of mushrooms that come to find out we don't know an awful lot about. Mushrooms are not a vegetable and they're not an animal. We use them in the kitchen. We eat them, but actually they are the third kingdom. There's the animal kingdom. There's the vegetable kingdom. There's the third kingdom. And we're just starting to understand how important that kingdom is.
Well, let's see, let me pull up this book that there's a new fungal book.
A fungal book.
Another yes. new. So Paul Stamets, who's probably, oh goodness, at least into his 60s, if not 70s, you know, so he is a generational icon that has been doing mushroom work for a long time. So the second generation, which we're coming to now, is a younger group of people, and they have a new book called In Search of Mycotopia.
Mycotopia.
The subtitle is Citizen Science, Fungi Fanatics, and the Untapped Potential of Mushrooms. And it's by a guy named Doug
Biereend. B-I-E-R-E-N-D.
Right. So I was reading a bit of that, and he talks about a woman in Chile who's really, really, you know, people seem to just, if you get involved in mushrooms, you get really involved. So she has taken this notion in most legislative processes, like where you have to do an environmental review before you construct something. And this is true in many, many, many countries. You know, you do an environmental impact statement, right? Mm-hmm. So in that impact statement, a lot of things are considered, and usually plants and animals, but fungi is often not mentioned in there. And so she has taken up a kind of a legal position to get a lot of these laws to include that the fungi impacted. Now, we're not just talking about, you know, the few chanterelles that you might spot in the woods. What she's talking about, and the movie is a very good way to get a quick review of this. And you can rent it, I think, on either Apple or Amazon.
It's called Fantastic Fungi.
Yeah. Okay. What we're talking about is underneath in the soil structure, where you cannot see it, are not the mushrooms that we see popping up in the forest floor are actually like the fruiting bodies, right? So it pops up and mushrooms propagate themselves through spreading spore. So the fruiting body pops up, and then underneath it are all the spores, and they like at some point in various ways shoot out and spread themselves around on the forest floor. But underneath all of the soil is a network, a web, and they show this in the movie. It's just beautiful. Miles and miles and miles of in the roots of all the plants, the fungi grow around the roots, and they have this symbiotic relationship where they transfer, you know, nutrients, and they cause pockets of air in the soil, which then hold the water. And this is an invisible network that I think in the film, didn't they say something like for every footstep you take in the forest, there are
300 little beasties, little rhizomes, little mushroom fungal things down there doing their thing.
Under every footstep. So, something that is so incalculable. We're just so not aware of the function of it and the importance of it. So, you know, there is a movement afoot to be sure to protect this because without it, because we cannot exist.
Yeah. There was a parallel made between how we communicate and how our brain communicates, but this was called the Earth's internet. And really it is an internet underneath our feet and it's all over. And it is actually, there's a fungus network, a rhizome network in the Northwest that is known as the biggest and oldest organism on Earth. It's a giant mushroom, folks, but it's huge. But this kind of thing happens all over the world. Mushrooms are all over doing amazing things. And what's interesting is that I found this interesting. Paul Stamets gives a good lecture. He gives good analogy here. And we don't understand about all these organisms yet. And he said, if all the organisms on the Earth could vote, if all the life on Earth could vote, if they were organized in a united organization of organisms, the acronym for that is if they could vote, I think things might be a little different. We are just a small part of this world.
Well, his point was that the mushrooms might be the largest voting bloc.
That's true.
And he also talks about in the movie how fungi were the first kind of elemental life form, basically, that came out of the ocean and because it started to break down the minerals of the volcanic and rock formations that, you know, they are the decomposers of the planet, basically.
And it's a good thing, too. Otherwise, we would be knee-deep in diapers and pizza boxes.
Refuse. You know, if we did not have the fungus that break down, you know, like if you're composting is the most simple, obvious thing. But, you know, when the leaves fall off the tree, if they didn't decompose, I mean, yes, certain members in Ames rake all their leaves up and carry them away, but they still carry them away to somewhere. And if there was nothing that decomposed the leaves, you know, we'd be over our head in leaf litter.
We would
among
be
other
in
things.
Big trouble. And also, what decomposes us and all the other living beings that die and with
from
the
dust
trees
to dust. From dust
and. Just think of this, all the derecho broken limbs that, and all of the stuff that fell on the ground and on our houses this past summer, all of that stuff, nothing is wasted. Nothing is wasted. It is dealt with by this wonderful thing called the world of fungi, the world of mycorrhizal structures. It has a lot to do with how we can survive because soil is not dead. Soil is full of, well, little beasties like little animals and little bacteria and little viruses are in the soil, but it's all held together and by this internet called the mycorrhizal structures, all the mushroom related bits. And we've been doing some nasty things to our farm fields.
Well, part of the problem in Iowa soil, there are three or four issues. Obviously, compaction, because we're running a lot of heavy equipment over the fields repeatedly. That kind of pounds it all down and kind of squashes it. But also the applications of fertilizers and pesticides disturb the work of the fungi in the soil, which, you know, eventually leads to a lot of runoff and erosion because the soil no longer holds the water that it needs and that the plants need. And Ilana and I are a little worried that we're going to have a bit of a drought this summer because it's been actually quite dry
and windy.
So, you know, all of the water that can be retained in the soil for any, no matter what you're farming, you need the water. And the mushrooms are a big part of holding water in the soil. So the there is the movie, which we recommended. Also, if you just want to go on and Google Paul Stamets, S-T-A-M-E-T-S, he has a number of TED Talks that convey it all very nicely and quickly. He also has an older book called Mycelium Running, How Mushrooms Can Help Save the World. He talks about, you know, of course, the decaying process. It also, mushrooms can do a lot of bioremediation, which means if you have a toxic oil spill, for example.
This is amazing. This is meat, Donna. This is really, go tell them, Donna.
Well, they've done enough experiments to really have the science down on this. You can, was it in the movie? I think it was in the movie where they had some kind of oil spills and they did, they put some mushrooms, certain kinds of mushrooms onto one pile of it. And then they used some other techniques too. What else did they put on it? I can't remember. There were four or five variables, but the mushroom one that had the proper inoculation, you know, they put the mushrooms on, they covered it up, they went away, they came back, they checked it out, and the mushroom actually completely regenerated the soil, got rid of all the toxicity. And then once that had happened, the insects started flying in, dropping the pollen, and then it started to grow back again. So it is a great tool for a remediation of multiple kinds of toxins. You know, when we have our big civilized oopsies, some of it can be fixed this way. So I think it would be good, you know, everybody would enjoy having a better understanding of how the fungi work. And so just a little internet research on Paul Stamets, S-T-A-M-E-T-S, can tell you about some of this. Now, this is there are also the culinary aspects of mushrooms, which we will get to in a minute.
Yes, we will. But the idea of understanding things, I guess, isn't the peak of wisdom is to realize you don't know as much as you thought you know. And people have been ignoring the mycelium world for a long time. We can't see it.
It is much more complex than we really understand, like many, many, you know, and you have some of those things also going on inside in your own digestive process. Everybody is carrying around not only microbes, the good ones and the bad ones, but also some fungi. It's in there.
It's in the air too. We
it's
are
in
actually
the air. It's in the water. Forms. It's inside us. It's outside us.
So it kind of getting to know our neighbors, which is always a good thing. Yeah. It's a good thing. Yes, it is. And also these getting back to the idea of it, of the natural internet, the world talking to one another by studying these mycorrhizal
networks,
all this stuff underneath the ground, they found out that trees use these networks to, well, not talk to one another, to communicate with one another. I don't know how in the world they do, but if one tree in a grouping is not doing so well, the other trees respond either by kind of shunning that tree or helping it along, or actually it works a lot with tree reproduction by kind of assessing its area, assessing its surroundings. A tree can figure out, well, should I put out lots of seeds this year? Should I, not put out a lot of seeds this year? Or should I help that tree next to me by sending along some help in my roots? This stuff is, and like I said, we're just scratching the surface.
Yeah,
this
we
is
humans
pretty.
Can be awfully oblivious to a lot of the really magnificent subtleties that go on around us. And I think for me, spring is always a good reminder of that. I really try to walk daily in the woods because every day it's a little bit different. We have almost reached what I always call the lacy green stage, just where there's just enough green in the treetops that it looks like somebody's been crocheting all up there in a really bright green.
Ooh, good analogy.
But
good
after
analogy.
Winter, you know, where things are a lot quieter on the natural scene, then when it kind of rebounds in the time of year that we're having right now, it really makes us more mindful of, you know, how much things do change, because you can see it every day.
We will be back to talk about more mushroom things and spring things. This is KHOI, and you're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. We are back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about mushrooms right now. And we're talking about mushrooms, and it seems like we have a lot to learn about mushrooms. We listened and visited and viewed a really good movie called Fantastic Fungi, which kind of got us going on this topic. But we still have lots to learn. Most of us know about mushrooms because it's things that we eat. It's something you put on your pizza. Donna, tell us about cooking with mushrooms and different ways of dealing with mushrooms in the kitchen.
It used to be that the main mushrooms you saw were, you know, what we call button mushrooms, the white ones. Then came along a brown version of the same thing called creminis, which you can pretty much buy in any grocery store. And then after that, we began to get portobellos, which are the big ones. Now, I really like portobellos. They have more flavor than the buttons or the creminis. And they're really, you know, like they're good for a vegan hamburger or something like that. They're really fun to cook with because, you know, they're 4 to 6 inches across on their cap. So they're very meaty sort of mushrooms. Then we start to, you can get more Asian mushrooms like enoki mushrooms and various other things are widely available here in Ames.
Not surprisingly, but people being people and always trying new things, there are people that are growing mushrooms.
Oh, yeah. Who's the guy at the farmer's market?
His name is Aaron Johnson. He has and we've talked to him on the Donna Lana Kitchen here. He started up a mushroom business. I thought, well, boy, that I know the mushrooms are hard to grow. And my goodness, he is doing great guns. Even during the pandemic, I've run into him delivering into grocery stores and restaurants.
Right, his product you can buy at Hy-Vee, at Wheatsfield, Fairway.
So
And they're oyster mushrooms predominantly.
Oh, he has all different kinds.
Does he have shiitake too, I think?
I think so. But I'm amazed at what he does. Now, mushrooms are kind of tricky, but we are beginning to understand them. I'm glad that somebody's actually doing a great job doing this, and people are growing them at home. What a good
idea.
Well,
doesn't he sell at the farmer's market a grow kit? So and this would be fun for children too, is to, you can buy the whole thing. It's a little cardboard boxy thing or something that completely has the mushroom medium that it grows on. And I suppose you just kind of add water and then they grow out and then you cut them off and then you eat them. So that is a fascinating home project that I'm sure he'll have those kits available at the farmer's market this summer, which will be starting soon, we hope. Also, I think, like I saw a PFI notice that Helen Gunderson is going to be growing mushrooms. People are starting to grow. Well, it's probably good. It's so dry this year. We're not going to have a lot growing wild in the forest, I'm afraid.
Yeah, we can learn about these things. Also, you've got a couple of products. Yes. Products.
Huh. Now, mushrooms, and Lana has done this. You freeze-dried a lot of mushrooms when you find
them. You can freeze them. That's fine. Dehydrate them.
Right.
Yeah, put them in that old food dryer, and they turn into these little mushroom-looking things all shriveled and dry, but this is good.
I have two products here that are so – they're dehydrated. You dehydrate the mushroom and then you grind it up. So it's like a powder. So there was a farmer's market at the old Hy-Vee drugstore on Main Street, I think over the weekend. And my housemates came back with this jar. It's called Umami Bomb, all purpose seasoning. Ingredients, oyster mushroom, spices, pink salt. So it's a powder for just shaking onto. I mean, it'd be good on eggs. You could put it on your hamburger. You could put it on your stir fry. It's I'm tasting the herbs in it. It's got to have black pepper and rosemary.
You've got it on your nose now.
Smelled it. Yeah. Okay. So dried mushrooms. Now, another product that's I have, which I can't remember where I bought. I'm sure I bought it online, is a dried porcini.
That's really nice. Oh,
yeah.
It's brown and it's all crumbledy and dry. And all it is no additives.
No, there's nothing in it but the mushrooms dried and ground. Now, porcinis have a really nice, much stronger flavor no mushrooms have strong flavors. Okay. They just have a little fuller flavor, let's say. So the dried porcini powder, what I use it for example, is enriching a stoop stock, anything where you want to bump the flavor, a good stir fry, you just sprinkle some of this on, even if I'm making like brown rice and I'm really bored and I don't want to be bothered with anything. And I throw on a little bit of kale and some garlic and put this, if you put the porcini in there, it's like, boom!
This having it as a powder is lovely.
It's very easy to use. You don't do anything except open the jar and throw it into the pot. So it is something you can probably track down online and buy it.
Dried porcini powder.
Porcini powder. Right.
This is a good use of that word umami. Umami, the kind of taste that we're just kind of getting used to, or it's a new kind of relatively.
Well, the concept is new. It's very, very old. It's one of the five flavors. So it's sweet, sour, salty, bitter, and umami.
Yeah.
And mushrooms have a good amount of umami in them.
Umami-ish.
Umami-ish, right. Good.
Well, back to the myceliums and the mycorrhizal networks that we were talking about before in the movie that we watched, it's amazing to find out that fungi, they convert lots of things, and we would be a whole different sort of planet.
But the other thing that's in the movie is the medicinal values of mushrooms. In Chinese medicine and actually a lot of older civilizations, mushrooms are, penicillin is a fungal medicine.
Oh, I think that's kind of important.
Yeah,
that's good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But there are also mushrooms are what can be referred to as tonic medicine. You know, they build you up. It's not, they're not there just to cure some immediate crisis. They're very nourishing and fortifying. Mm-hmm. And then also, this is fairly new, but it was in the Paul Stamets movie. And also, it's in a book by Michael Pollan. And Michael Pollan was in the movie also. The book by Michael Pollan is called How to Change Your Mind. And what they are talking about is what happened historically and through many, many cultures have used mushrooms and their hallucinogenic properties to transform personal understanding, let's say. And this is gone on, you know, ethnobotanists can tell you they've been doing this in cultures for thousands of years. And then in the 1960s and early into the 70s, there were unleashed in this culture a lot of more psychedelic man, you know, and it was then thoroughly stamped out by the Nixon administration with the war on drugs. Now, obviously, it needed some corralling, but part of the problem is when they started the war on drugs, it stamped out a whole bunch of very legitimate scientific research on the effects, the actual pharmaceutical effects of some of these mushrooms on things like PTSD and long-term depression. And so because the war on drugs stopped all ability by all legitimate researchers to continue to explore the pharmaceutical properties, it's only in the last, I think maybe I read
three or four years ago. Yeah, 2010, 2000.
Right. Yeah. First started was Johns Hopkins University finally got federal permission to try using I think it was specifically the psilocybin mushroom. And the research was limited to people who had terminal cancer. So what they were documenting, and they did find conclusively that under close supervision and with well-guided dosages and, you know, people who were at the end of life were given the psilocybin, and what happened to them was they had a sort of a mystical connective experience in their brain chemistry that allowed them, they all reported that they were less afraid to face death, and that even though they had limited time left on life in their life, they were able to not be anxious about it and to be more joyful and appreciative of the time they had left. Now, I would call that a good outcome, right?
I think that's good. Maybe this goes back to the original Earth's internet. It's the connecting. It's the
right.
being
it's affecting,
part of everything.
It's affecting some of the neuro networks in the brain. And we don't know a lot about it. So, but there is a lot more research than there used to be. I noticed the other day an article was in a financial publication that there is actually now traded on the New York Stock Exchange. One of the pharmaceutical companies is preparing for the market. I mean, of course, it will be heavily
regulated,
you know, with proper medical supervision, but they are developing a drug that is based on psilocybin mm-hmm. that is intended to help deal with real intractable mental anguish, mm-hmm. like PTSD.
Yeah, the idea of we should not look away from things that are dealing with mental anguish. I think,
areas that so far the drugs developed to treat some of these things have not been very effective. And, you know, we are now beginning to open up to do more research. I think research is always a good idea. So there was a bit of that in the film too, talking about the medical potentials, and the nutritional potentials for mushrooms.
This is a good thing. It is a good thing. And like I said, we have a lot to learn, and perhaps It's good. And the idea that mushrooms and this whole third kingdom of the fungi can maybe have a lot to teach us about living on this earth. What a good thing. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You're listening to KHOI 89.1 Community Radio. And we're going to take a little segue here and talk about cranes, because
it's migration season.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's kind of the tail end, but they are migrating. Carl Kurtz is this wonderful naturalist and prairie enthusiast and photographer. And he has every week in the local paper, he sends in one of his really beautiful photographs. And this week, or maybe this last week, he has this great picture of two sandhill cranes, and he always tells us a little something about what he's taking a picture of. Sandhill cranes are the oldest living bird species with a lineage in the fossil record dating back some 10 million years. Greater sandhill cranes overwinter in the Southeast and go across the Midwest and go up into Canada to winter. They are omnivores feeding on green plant seeds and vertebrae. Their loud, rattling, bugle-like call often indicates their presence before we see them. So let's take a thought for sandhill cranes. And here is a tune called March of the Cranes. Welcome back. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was a tune called the March of the Cranes. And that March of the Cranes was played by a group called Gramini from Madison, Wisconsin. It was part of a CD called Germinations, a Bluegrass Symphony. It was commissioned for the Fermentation Festival and the Worm Farm Institute's Decomposition Project. That's D/Composition Project in October 2012. The fermentation.
A lot of food tie-ins
out there. Yeah. A lot of fermentation festival here. And that is a celebration of art, food, and culture in southwestern Wisconsin. Actually, it's in Reedsburg, Wisconsin. It's where I grew up. They're doing good things there. If you want to find out more about Gramini and this Bluegrass Symphony, go to Gramini.net on Facebook, Gramini.
Do you think they'll have it this year? Who knows?
I don't know.
That's something I've always wanted to go to. Yeah. It sounds like a good road trip.
It's a good road trip. So, something else to think about growing this time of year. We mentioned ramps earlier and green things coming up. Nettles, Donna. nettles. Nettles are an amazing thing. Nettles come up this time of year. They're not very tall, but they're a handy sort of green.
Yeah, yeah, and they're called stinging nettles.
Yes, they are.
For a reason.
For a reason. Nettles have a really nasty bite to them. They have fierce protection from being overconsumed, to say the least here. Yes, they contain a acid that is really, really nasty to skin. So if you're going to be harvesting them, wear gloves. Wear gloves.
Well, if you have a big, what was it? Oh, in France, my in-laws had a beach house that had a huge batch of stinging nettles. And I walked through it one day, not, of course, realizing what it was. And your whole, your ankles and your calves get, it'll itch you anywhere that it touches you.
For me, it's not as bad as poison ivy. It does go away, but
nothing like poison ivy. It doesn't spread.
Yeah.
Once it hits you, it just stings for a while.
Yeah.
But it doesn't spread.
Yeah. However, they're also good for you. Vitamins and minerals and superior levels of phytonutrients and life-sustaining vitamins and minerals. A cup of nettle tea can offer 500 milligrams of calcium, double of what's in cow's milk. It fortifies the blood and does wonderful things to deoxidize your body.
Nettles are also a traditional remedy for, like, when you get watery eyes and sneezy nose for allergies. If you you can buy stinging nettle tincture or stinging nettle capsules, or you can go out and pick your own this time of year. So the thing with eating them, because they are a tasty green, you do have to pick them with care, and you kind of want the upper parts, because they get later in the season, they get tougher.
Yeah.
So you take the top parts off. You can just, if you're going for a walk in the woods, you can just take a pair of gloves and a little bag and a little pair of scissors. And what you do when you get home is, rinse them off and then blanch them. Because as soon as you, just like we did with the ramps in the recipe, take a big pot of boiling water and you either just stick them in quickly and then, pull them up. But the heat deactivates the sting.
Mm-hmm.
So you always want to do that before you eat them. I mean, there are people who swear by eating just the very tiny tips raw, but
it takes all kinds of people.
I would call that unnecessary bravery,
yeah.
But So nettles are just a classic thing to eat because they are widespread through lots of parts of the world. And, they're easy to find, and they're numerous when they grow in what you call disturbed soil.
Right.
Like I've seen them sometimes along the river banks of the Skunk River and things like that. So we have another recipe from the Forager Chef, the guy that we mentioned earlier. It's called a Turkish nettle salad. So it's basically you blanch the nettles, right? And, then you take some garlic and oil, and you just the garlic chopped up in the oil, and you cook it really good. But then you throw the garlic away, and because what you're doing is infusing the oil with the garlic, right? Then you put the nettles in, and then you add you kind of mix them together, and then you add what else? Black pepper, red pepper flakes, and Here's the fun part. Ricotta cheese.
Now, I've had nettle greens as greens, which are fun. The idea of putting ricotta cheese or some other really good soft cheese like that, that is a really good idea. I like that.
Yeah, this is apparently a classic Middle Eastern recipe. And then, once you've just barely mixed the cheese in, you want some lumps still in it from the ricotta.
Lumps.
And then you serve it with just a little lemon wedges on the side from people. And you can pour a little more olive oil if you want. But that's there's so many ways to use nettle. You can stir them into a pasta dish. But they, they're very mild in flavor and do well with, obviously, lemon and garlic and that sort of thing.
Very good. And to make nettle tea. Closer to summer, when the plants have grown tall and fibrous, as we talked about, tough fibers, dry the leaves in a paper bag for tea. And then you could add a tablespoon of dried nettle leaf tea to one cup of hot water. And it's good, pretty good medicine. Yeah,
you could keep that all year round. And it really, I have to say, I do have allergies, especially pollen allergies. And nettles just often keeps me from having to, you know, take the over-the-counter drugs.
Good. See? Good stuff all around us.
Yeah. The only difference is if you're taking the capsules or the tinctures, you know, unlike if you take something from the drugstore, which is going to last you for 12 hours, the nettles you have to take, you know, maybe every 4 to 6 hours or something. They do work really, really well with no side effects ever.
Very good. We like nettles. Nettles are good. So today we talked about this wonderful world of fungi. Donna, kind of recap some of the books we talk about. And we talked about an interesting man that you can look up on Facebook called...
Not Facebook, Lana. Google.
Google. Paul Stamets.
Stamets. And there's a lot of... I mean, you don't even have to rent the movie. There are several free TED Talks that kind of give you the gist of the whole thing.
And it's good to learn new things and good to learn that... We have a lot to learn. We do.
Never a dull moment.
Never a dull moment. And one of the books that Donna mentioned was Paul Stamets' book called Mycelium Running. And this new book that is kind of, it was mentioned in the movie too, there's a new resurgence, a new generation of people. And
the young folk are picking it up.
And they are... And this is mentioned, amateur naturalists. Somehow there isn't big money for drug companies to dive into this. So a lot of this cutting edge research and all these things that are being found out are by people who love to do it.
Right. Like Paul Stamets himself is not an academic. He is a self-trained mycologist. And as was, for example, Charles Darwin.
Was
the sort of a... You know, the Victorian amateur naturalist. Just because you're an amateur naturalist does not mean that you're lightweight.
Oh, they're finding great things. They're finding that fungi are extremely, extremely powerful for food, for decomposition, for pesticides, for fighting viruses, all kinds of things, and mind expansion. Don't forget that. I like that part. We could have that. We could have our minds expanded.
I could use to expand my mind even at my age, right?
Right. And the idea of being connected and learning about the connectedness and the peacefulness and the let's push the envelope here and say that love all around us. I think a wise man once said, what's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? We can do that. We need to dismiss it all the time. No, we don't. Very good. So thanks for joining us today. We gather here every Tuesday and always talk about something or other. And we talked about fungi today and nettles and ramps and a little bit about sandhill cranes. One thing we wish to leave you with is this COVID-19 thing is still going on. And I know there's vaccinations are happening and we're getting vaccinated. We're feeling ever so smug if we're being vaccinated, but still.
We're just feeling relieved.
We still be patient. Be kind and wear your mask. It's important. We'll get through this together.
Don't forget to wash your hands. That's always appropriate.
Wash your hands, folks. We can do that. Listen to us, Donna and Lana. We know our stuff. Yes, we do. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more at www.khoifm.org. Support this fine radio station. We had music today by Gramini from their CD Germinations, a bluegrass symphony. You heard A March of the Cranes and Backcountry Ramble. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering, as usual, by Mike Murphy. Eat good food. And enjoy life.
KHOI presents Chad Elliott and Bo Ramsey at Stevens Auditorium. May 9th at 5 p.m. Come to enjoy the music and to support KHOI. Live streaming for home viewing will also be available. Tickets and live stream links can be purchased online at khoifm.org. Safety protocols will be in place with physical distancing in the seated areas and enhanced disinfecting procedures. Masks will be required unless actively eating or drinking. Thank you to Chad Elliott and Bo Ramsey for supporting community radio. That I could stay. See why Stevens is a co-sponsor of this event. Funding for this concert provided by the Ames Commission on the Arts.
The public is invited to the League of Women Voters Ames and Story County program with Dr. Jenny Reisner, Superintendent of the Ames Community School District. Dr. Reisner will discuss inclusivity, diversity, and culture conflict in public school administration. The program is Thursday, April 15th at 7 p.m. and will be virtual. To join, please email prez.lwv@gmail.com.